Blog Talk Radio.
Bismillah, assalamu alaikum. Apparently there is some technical difficulty. It is showing that the audio is playing, but I'm not hearing anything. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and start off last week's portion. And then if I see the way to get this straight, then of course I will restart. It will be a continuation of the Sunday Taaleem from Oakland in October 1981. Inshallah, thank you for your patience. Let's see what happens.
Got it in his head. He can read the book. The light is in the book, in what he reads. The words that come out of his mouth, that's what the light is. But there ain't no light in his head. Yeah, that's what they're saying about him. You think they didn't dress him up like that to mock him? They dressed him up like that to mock him. Can you think they can be praising the preacher and put his collar backwards and everybody else's frontwards? The banker's collar's frontwards. The scientist's collar's frontwards. The governor's collar's all frontwards. The preacher's is back. Yeah, that don't make no sense. All the leaders of the world wear a collar open and closing in the front. He got his open and closing in the back. And a window in his throat. The throat is the place where you have no conscience. The senses are in the mouth, in the head, in the body, not the throat. If you eat something bad for you, the only way the throat will deal with it is when it starts to kill the throat. It can be poison. It can be nasty. Throat will let it down. But if it pains the throat physically, the throat wants to throw it out. Or hurry up and swallow it to get that pain out. If the throat thinks it can send it down, throat don't care what it's going to do to the bottom. No, the throat just want to get it out of the throat. If the throat thinks it can get it down quick, it get it to the swamp. And thing going to tear up the system. Throat represents the instinctive spiritual impulse that doesn't have rational grasp. So the mouth is intelligent. The mouth tastes. In fact, the nose, it's a watchman. It checks what goes into it. It want to know if it looks all right, but the smell is, smell okay. The nose want to check it out before it go in, even go into the mouth. And the mouth gets it, and the mouth tastes it. And if it tastes like it ain't right, mouth pull. Spit it out. But when you get excited, you act impulsively. And the throat then is a check, right? The throat is a check when your senses are not working. The throat is a check. So it's like a last check. You go real hairy. The vision, the eyes, the mind didn't catch it. When you put it in the mouth, the senses in the mouth didn't catch it because you had blinded your senses by desperate appetite, right? So you put it in the mouth. Thing was too big. Needs to be chewed a little bit. You're almost dead. The throat said, hey, that's too much. So the throat represents a blind discipline, or a check on your instinct, not on your intelligence. Check on your instinct, not on your intelligence. That's what the throat represents in this symbolic language. Okay? So the preacher wears a collar on his neck and is turned backwards, meaning that he's not in conscious control of his instincts. His instincts are being manipulated. And really, the knowledge is not his. The knowledge is in his voice. But also it's a play what on the language. That really light doesn't start in the heart of his. Light starts in expression. If you can't express something, there's no light. I don't care what you think about. Until you form it in your mind, structurally, intelligently, having some kind of rational, visible, definable form in your mind, when you express it, it's nothing. It ain't light in your head, and it ain't light out here. But if you can form it in some kind of expressive way where it conveys something as a language conveys something, as right language, it's clear in your mind, you have knowledge in your head, it's light here, it's light out there. So they're playing on two things, that the word is the light, and the word forms in the throat. And the preacher, that's where his knowledge, that's where his power is, that's where the controls are in the language. But his light is there, the light is there for him in his throat, the window seat light in his throat, meaning that also that his knowledge is not in his head, it's in his throat. The higher they go, the different kind of dress they wear. The higher they go up in the order. They get so high in the order, they wear all white. Is that right? All white. Some of them wear all red. Red, mostly red. Gold and white. They wear different colors. They go up. But the lowest dress of that order is black, collar turned backwards, and a white window in the front. Now, he has a white window in the front. But does he really have the white window? No. It's just a symbol there showing you what knowledge is in the word and the language. He doesn't have a white window. Go to the church and you see stained windows. Stained windows. Not white. What does stained windows mean? Stained windows, what does stained mean? Stained means to impair, to hurt, to spoil, to mess up in some kind of way. Is that right? Stain is stain. So stain has different meanings, but this is one of its meanings. To impair, to hurt, to mess up in some way. To stain. Now, he has stained windows. Why stained windows? If his house is made of stain, has stained windows, that tells me something about his mentality. His mentality is not light. His mentality is symbolism. Stain means symbolic. He can't see the light out there because he lives in symbolism. And his symbolism set him out in the light. Can they look out the church windows and see what's happening outside? No, they can't. When they're in church, you can't see outside. Right or wrong? Yeah, you got stained windows. When you're in the church, you can't see outside. But look, also the person outside can't see in the church. The person outside can't see the church. And that's true. If your mind ain't like those people, you say, I don't know what the hell those people, I don't know what they see in that. Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah, I don't know what they see in that, man. I ain't never been able to go along with that. Yeah, so those who are in can't see out, and those who out can't see in.
Very difficult to cut it off, but that was a portion of what we aired last week. And so you can go back to the archive, blogtalkradio.com, and just put in my name, or you can also just put in the Sunday Ta'alim Oakland, and that selection will come up. But I have the final portion of the lecture. This is, I think this is the fourth week that we've been sharing that lecture from the Imam, October 18th, 1981. And I wanted to complete it this morning, and it is an hour. So rather than extend the time, I'm going to go ahead and start playing that last portion. It's a continuation from the same subject. And again, you can hear what we just cut off. You can hear that by going to blogtalkradio.com and put in my name, or put in Sunday Ta'alim Oakland, and it should come up for you. Thank you for your patience. Assalamu alaikum.
The feet in the whole establishment represents the lowest of all the people. The feet represent the lowest of all the people. And they wear shoes. And here the man at a certain period in the progress of the thinking of society, or the seasonal or fashionable thinking of the society, which is their cultural, seasonal cultural mind. At a certain time, he referred to what they were wearing on their feet as mule. A mule is an ass. A dumb thing. Yes, mule is an ass. A dumb thing. So he was saying, now we have made the masses asses. Asses. The word shoe goes back to ancient Egypt, to ancient Egyptian mythology. It's not spelled S-H-O-E. Look at the word itself, S-H-O-E. Where can you find a word, another word in the English language, that rule fit into, or that fits into that rule for spelling? There are many rules for spelling. But where is that rule to pronounce S-H-O-E, shoe? I don't know that rule. That's one by itself. Shoe, S-H-O-E, shoe. But in Egyptian mythology, it's S-H-U, shoe. They call it S-H-O-E, shoe. And what was shoe? What is shoe in Egyptian mythology? Shoe in Egyptian mythology represents the spiritual ascension. The spirit of man, the spirit of man in its ascendancy. The spirit of man in its ascendancy. Now, life, the growth of life, must begin with a spirit, a feeling, a desire, a spirit for elevation. So they call that truth. And believe me, nothing can happen in your rational mind until you get the feeling, the desire in you to rise up, to be better. That's why the Quran tells us, never will God change the state of a people until they first change what is bothering their heart. You must change the spirit, the attitude that's in you. You must change that first in order to get some improvement. So, Shu, in Egyptian mythology, represented that. It represented the ascending spirit. And how does man ascend? Physically. He ascends by finding balance on his feet. I said physically. How does the baby get up physically and stand on his feet? By learning to balance on his feet, he's able to push his whole body up. He crawls on his fours, hands and knees. He walks, he pulls himself up to something until he learns. He wobbles and wiggles. But finally learn how to balance himself on his 2 feet, right? And as soon as he's born, they don't wait till he walks. As soon as he's born, they want him to have some shoes. Why? Because symbolically, they're saying with the symbolic language, that the baby is born. He has inherited this spiritual instinct in him, achievement instinct in him, to bring him upon his foot, the spirit to rise, to ascend, is already in him when he's born. So you don't wait for the baby to, he ain't even crawling yet, and he got on his shoes. Right? Yeah. Now, you know, I used to wonder, why they put shoes on a baby and he ain't even crawling yet? They got his feet all funky, all squeezed up in those shoes, and the baby ain't even crawling. He ain't thinking about walking, he ain't even crawling, and they got him on shoes. Doesn't make sense, does it? Doesn't make no kind of sense at all. It's only symbolic. It only makes sense in symbolism. No sense in reality at all. Now, so, look. Truth is the name always, because that is really the truth, meaning in the symbolic language of man's evolution or ascendancy, that's true. It represents the spirit to ascend, the spirit to rise up. And to gain balance. You can't stand without balance. The baby has to learn balance in order to stand. And learning balance, it learns to walk. But it has to have balance. So what is the key for ascension, for sending up? Balance. Balance. But there's also another key. What is the other key? Power. It ain't easy. The baby has to, you have strength. Mm-hmm. You strength, muscle his way up, right? Takes muscle, strength. So he has to have balance and power. Balance and power. He has to exert himself, assert or exert himself, and he has to also use his intelligence to keep a balance. Right? Now think about that. Think about that. If those are the first principles in getting up, and I'm talking about in the broad general sense getting up. Now, if those are the essential principles for getting up, think about that. And tell me, isn't that what we need in the masses, in the American masses, in the world masses? Don't we need to teach them to turn back to their origin, to their development in the origin of life, and learn that first you must learn to discipline yourself intelligently. You must be cautious. You must be attentive. You must be thinking. You must be alert. You must be controlled. You must be conscious of your whole presence to keep everything in right check. Balance yourself and use force. Apply energy. Use force. Exert yourself. That's what we got to do. We have to be powerful. We have to be powerful. We have to exert ourselves. Be willing to exert force and be attentive. Be alert. Be balanced. Be in full cognizance of the whole structure. And bring it up. Bring it up. That's what we have to do. So they're telling us with symbolic language that the same principles that evolved you naturally, God did that. Didn't nobody teach the baby to do that. God did that. The same principles that evolved you naturally are the principles you need to succeed in this life. That's what it's telling us, brothers and sisters. And I could talk on this for a long, long time. I'm telling you, because we just opened up a whole new subject. No, no, we're not going to do it. I'm going to keep going. We're talking about clothes. Now, what do we say? When I get to heaven, I'm going to put on shoes. Didn't say mules. Didn't say clogs. Didn't say sandals. Said shoes. When I get to heaven, I'm going to put on shoes. But in the Islamic heaven, it's sandals, not shoes. Sandals. Another word, another subject. On the same subject, though. Yes. When I get to heaven, I'm going to put on shoes and walk all over God's heaven. You can walk when you got intelligence and balance and power to exert your will. You can do it. You can't make no progress if you ain't got that. It means I'm going to progress when I get to heaven. I'm going to have a big, wide field for progress because I'm going to have shoes. I hope that's ready. Now, let me see here where we are. All right. Another word, loafers. Now, if you don't have initiative, get up and go. Courage, incentive to exert yourself. And discipline, mental discipline. Most likely you're going to be a loafer. Right? So they put you on loafers. When they want you to stop exerting yourself, look, we don't need these masses. We don't need all this doggone production. Too much of it. And if we don't reduce their intelligence level, they'll become a problem for us. They'll demand too much. So now we don't need them in production. We don't need all these people to do the intelligent work. Come on. Change those shoes to mules. Change them to clogs. Whatever. Change them to wedgies. You know they used to be called wedgies? Yeah. Look up in the dictionary and tell you. Wedgies. What is wedgie? A duck foot is wedged. Mm-hmm. And his foot feet are wedged for swimming. So wedgies mean put him in the water. Take him out of rational thought and put him into church thought. Where'd you make a duck out of him? You know about the 13 ducks. Drinking up all the water from Caveman Lake. And then you know about that? Let's see the hands of those who recognize that language. Yes. Yeah. Hey, 13 ducks. Sent the farm maid to drink up the water in the caveman lake. Now, here, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teacher, Farad, is using symbolism again. Duck is an animal that loves water better than he loves air and land. But he's able to go on land, in the air, and water. Some ducks can even go down deep into the water, like a fish. They fly out of the air, dive down under the surface of the water, and go deep in the water. Pick up a fish and come back up to the top. Swim on the top and fly. You're aware of that, aren't you? I have seen that. I read about them, and I've also seen them do that. Yes, some ducks, they do that. All right. They are able to get around in the land or in the air, but their special habitat is the water. That's what they love. When they're in the water, they're happy. And the duck is a highly sensitive animal. Now I'm not talking about the duck on the farm. I'm talking about the duck on the McDonald's farm. That's you, not you. Okay, so. The duck is a highly sensitive animal, and he walks, he just shaking all the time. You ever notice a duck? And he just talking? Yeah, you know, ain't nobody around half that. What? And when you can't handle the work that you're trying to do, they call you a quack. Right? A quack. What does that symbol represent in religion? Prophet Muhammad, he just got it from the language source. He got a peep into what was happening. He was a member of the Jacobites, which I believe. what does it represent? The duck. You know, what? He traced the word down. Duck. What does another meaning for duck? To look out. To be careful. To be alert. Move before you get hit. You see? Duck. You see? And the duck got that name, they say, because he ducks his head under the water. And even sometimes in the water, he'll duck his head. You notice the duck be walking? And he'll duck his head down like that and come back up. Yeah. He has done it so long in the water, I guess he just got a habit of doing it even when he ate in the water. Duck come back up. So, and his feet are yellow. His feet are yellow. Now, see, these people that does this making up the language, the symbol manipulators, they are wise. And they study very carefully a thing before they include it in a language context. So the yellow feet goes along with what? Wisdom. It will stand for wisdom. Not that the duck is wise. Don't no nut go out here now and say the duck is wise feet, man. Well, the duck ain't nothing but a symbol a man used to say something through. Yeah, so the duck got yellow feet and yellow mouth. Yellow feet and yellow mouth. Orange, really, orange-like. But yellow, they say yellow. Yellow feet, or orange-yellow feet, and orange-yellow mouth. It means his knowledge is in his feet, and in his expression, in his language. In his speech, what that means? In his ascendant spirit. He has a knowledge of the spirit that has caused him to ascend. Spirit that is in his nature that caused him to grow and ascend. That spirit is inherited out of nature, if you understand. Now, a lot to be said, but we're trying to rush. Now, he has that science, and because of that science, he has the ability to express it in his language. He's also got an ability to vocalize it, to express it in his language. So that's what the duck represents. Now, who called him a quack? That shouldn't be no quack. Got all that knowledge? Why is he a quack? If he's a quack, because his school or his society has been confused by those who have supplanted them. They have been supplanted. The duck is referring to who? Christ and his disciples. Not Christ the person, but the order, the Christian top order, Christ and his disciples. 13 ducks drank the water of the caveman's lake. So what it means? It means now we have given the black man the same mind that we gave the select few that we took out of the Gentile civilization to lead the world. We have now given that same mind to the black man of America. Just like you had your leadership in 13, and believe me, the cabinet of the president, the political order is also copied after that order, 13, right? 13 people. So it represents Western leadership. So he was saying that the same thing that you did to the Jews that you selected for the Gentile world, we have now, the same thing that our father, did to the few that we selected from the Gentile world to rule the world, we have now done it to the blacks of America. And just like you struggle with our knowledge to come into real, clear, rational grasp of what we have and became a quack, they are going to do the same thing, and they are also going to be quack. They'll have the knowledge, the science that we have, we pass it on to them in their feet. What is the science of the feet? Progress naturally. Accept the nature, the natural order of things. Isn't that what the father of Elijah Muhammad taught his followers? Say, look, you must have food, clothes, shelter. You must have some of this good earth. You must have knowledge, the same knowledge they have, the sciences and everything. Isn't that what he told them? That's putting your feet on the ground. That's giving you the inspiration to ascend upward in a natural way. All right? And he also told them, told Elijah Muhammad, things that he thought was great, great secret wisdom. Which, if you compare it with what the Bible says, it does represent a high, high understanding of much of the Bible's secret wisdom. When you compare it. Now, so he gave that to him. But Honorable Elijah Muhammad speaks. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad got a mouth of a wise man. His mouth is that of wisdom. His position is that of the learned. His speech in Arabic, if you say his position, qadimah, means position. Same word, qadim, for feet, you see. So in English it's the same, but I could give it to you quick from Arabic, and in English it takes too long to go through the history of the word. Now, so position also means feet. Feet in a position means the same. I want a foothold in this. Position in this, you see. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's position was that of a wise man. He wants some material progress. He wants authority over himself, authority for his people. He wants some independent authority for his own people over their own destiny. That's wise talk. That's intelligent talk. Wise talk. That's the aspirations of the learned, the wise people of this earth. That's their aspirations, you see. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in his position, showed wisdom. And in his voice came out what? Symbolic talk, but in its symbol, hidden meaning, was great wisdom. But in the world, what was he called? A quack. I read it in the papers. They called him a quack. I remember them calling him a quack. They called him a quack. Why? Because he wasn't given the deep insight, the clear understanding of what Farad gave him. Farad didn't give him that. He didn't give it to him. He wouldn't give it to him. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was left with all of his followers doing what? Trying to get that deep understanding.
He struggled for it. And he told all his followers to do the same thing. He said, we have to study deep. The real knowledge, he said, is under the surface. He said, we have to dig deep. I've heard him say that 1,000 times. So you have to dig deep. And he would discuss it with others. And he said, maybe you got something there, brother. And he had a way of thinking. He knew his way of thinking was right. But he couldn't bring the words, the literal words, out so he could see what was hidden behind them. But he struggled for it, and he at least knew the direction. He was sure of that. The direction was to go naturally, scientifically, not spookily. He knew that. So he had that right. And no matter what they came up with, if it sounds foolish, Arbiter Ali Muhammad said, no, you ain't got it yet, brother. He knew that was wrong because it didn't make natural or rational sense. See? So he was put on the right track, but he wasn't given the language. This ain't the first time that was done, and I hate to hold you, but this is good for you to have this knowledge. Should this knowledge die in me? I may die tomorrow. All right. Samson was a strong man, great warrior. He beat the army of the Philistines with the jawbone of an ass and asked the Jews, and if they tell you the truth, ask the rabbis, scholars in the Judaism or the rabbis. If they tell you the truth, they'll tell you what I'm saying is true. Samson in the Jewish religion represents a renegade, not a true man, not a true Jew. He represents a renegade. Samson was a renegade. He did what he was not supposed to do. What was that? He married a Philistine woman. He was not supposed to do that. And it doesn't mean he married a physical woman. It means he shared his knowledge with a non-Jew. But he shared it with the woman in symbolism. What is another key for it? He said, if you had not plowed my heifer, you would not have been able to get me. Plowed his heifer. And he was talking about his wife. He married a wife of the Philistines, and then the Philistines plowed his heifer. What does it mean? It means that he shared his knowledge in symbolism with the Philistine society, wife, with a certain society in the Philistine society, religious order in the Philistine society. He shared his knowledge with that religious order in their society, another order within an order, a woman within a bigger woman. And he said, if you had not plowed my heifer, you would not have conquered me, would not have subdued me. What did he mean? That if you had not plowed, let me plow, took the symbolism that I shared with the religious people in your kingdom, and you plowed it. What is plowing? Plow means digging, dig under the surface. Dig deep. If you had not studied deep and struggled mentally deep into the meaning that I, symbolic symbolism that I share with these people, you would not have found the key to my strength. That's all it's saying. That's all it's saying. Now, dear beloved brothers and sisters, so I'm telling you, it's not the first time it was done. Quran Muhammad did the same thing. He came as a Samson, a strong man of that knowledge. And he shared that knowledge in symbolism with one of the American society. And it happened to be the most oppressed, the most oppressed, the most subjected of the society, black people, right? And now, the knowledge didn't come to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad directly, came to me. But now, what will they say, the learned say, in secrecy? He would not have got that if he had not plowed our heifer. Isn't that what they would say? Yes. They say he would not have got that if he had not plowed our heifer. You see? So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam was their heifer. And I plowed their heifer. I plowed that bitch to death. So they say, oh, he wouldn't have got that if he had not plowed our heifer. But they don't understand. They don't understand the power of Allah. Is Allah pleased with you using people to create new thoughts to change the attitude and thinking and sensitivities of the world for you to exploit? He's not pleased with that. They can't see that. No, he didn't fly our helper. God revealed to him our helper. They can't see it being that. No, he plowed our heifer. Allah is my witness. Actually, I didn't plow that heifer. I didn't even know where that heifer was. I went to other books, to the Quran, to the Bible, to books on mythology, sociology, psychology. I was looking for understanding. And after getting understanding, then I came back. And I saw that the language of the Nation of Islam was much like the mythologies of the world. Then I came back with that understanding of mythology, and I applied the same knowledge that God had blessed me to apply to the mythologies of the world. I applied it to Faraz Muhammad's mythology, and it opened up. That's right. And it opened up. So tell me that that was their doing. That's God's doing. I wasn't interested in that. I was only interested in two. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Praise be to Allah. So they call some shoes wedgies. Wedgies. Your toes are not wedged. They're open like that. Open toes means free senses. Free. And symbolism means free senses. They're open. If you wedge them, that means you tie them, you bind them, you enslave them. It means enslaved senses. So the duck, he loves water, meaning he loves emotionalism, he loves sensitivity, but water, the same emotional nature, also cleans us. Because if people have no emotional nature, they have no morals. It's the emotional nature where morals come to life, right? Because we feel sorry for something, because we're affected in certain ways, then we are moral people. So actually the base of morality is the emotional nature, you see? So morals and emotion are represented both in the symbol water. So these people are highly morally sensitive, but they are emotional. Emotionally sensitive, highly emotionally sensitive too. And they prefer that to reason. They prefer that to rational teaching. They prefer that. Don't the church people prefer emotionalism to rational teaching? And most of the people in Islam, I mean worldwide, don't they prefer emotionalism to rational teaching? Yes. Most of the religious people of the world, don't they fit in that same description? Yeah, so that's what it represents. The religious blind masses of the world, all of them, put into one boat. So Jesus was crucified, so they say, and they laugh at what they did to the leadership of Christianity. They laugh at it by calling it duck, quack. Yes, Farad Muhammad, he knew the laugh of the mockers on Christianity, so he made the same laugh on us. Called us 13 ducks. 13 ducks. Say, when they have drink the water of the caveman's lake, meaning that he had made us spiritually thirsty, serious. We love to go into spiritual things. We want to get into the religion. We were just like ducks. You know, we would go out on the land, and we would go in the air a little bit, but brother, we wanted to get right back to the spiritual teachers. There was our happy ground. The happy ground of the in black Muslims was the spiritual teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So he prescribed us as 13 ducks. And he said, when they drank up the water of the caveman's lake, what does it mean? It means when our curiosity have destroyed the emotional content and moral content in religion of the Western society. Now, if that didn't happen, baby, I'm not standing here and opening this message today. You wonder, who messed up the religion? Who messed up the religious sensitivity in the United States, in the West? I will tell you, Farad did it. Through the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Farad did it. Blasting out in the open world that God is the black man and the devil is the white man and the church is a lie. There's nothing after death. This is all of it. Blasting that out for 40-some years, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad poison the atmosphere. The moral and spiritual atmosphere of the West. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad poisoned it. And really, he was the main instrument for bringing about the Jacobite plan to unseat religion and morality in Western society. And they did it. That came to be a reality in these last 10 years or 15 years. They have unseated morality and religion in this Western society. Am I right or wrong, brother? All right. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was the instrument that they used to do that, and the Nation of Islam. So they said what they will do in a minute. You know, Farah Muhammad wouldn't speak with that authority unless he had something. He said, we made him, and we can destroy him overnight in the twinkling of an eye. That's what he said. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said he said it. He said, brother, we made him. And we can destroy him in the twinkling of an eye. Now, if the same one made us, don't you know secretly they bought both the same thing? We made them. We can destroy them in the twinkling of an eye. Who can they destroy in the twinkling of an eye? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam.
That's right.
And if, brother, we made them, and we can destroy them in the twinkling of an eye. Now, if the same one made us, don't you know secretly they thought both the same thing? We made them. We can destroy them in the twinkling of an eye. Who can they destroy in the twinkling of an eye? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam.
That's right. That's right.
And they did it. After the Nation of Islam had achieved its purpose, for them, they destroyed the Nation of Islam.
Right.
In the twinkling of an eye. They brought in bad moral influences, and then the materialistic ideas became the very thing to unseat the Nation of Islam. That's right. Yeah. But they had no idea that a baby would escape the destruction. Oh, amen. Allah says they plan. And I plan, and I'm the best of planners. All praise is due to Allah. Now, let's see here that we cover what we wanted to get here. The highest order in the Christian religion, whether you recognize it or not, is not the Baptists or the Protestants, the Catholics. Catholics represent a protest movement. I mean, the Protestants represent what it says, protest movement. A movement to get more recognition for the masses in the religious establishment. But the real hierarchy is still the Catholic Church. All right? Now, they call their clothes vestments. Vestments. Now, what is the meaning of vestment? To take authority away. Is that right? Or the act of taking away authority. So they call their clothes authority. Vestments, authority. They are saying to the rest of the world that the authority is with us. Some of the other preachers are really, they call it vestments too. But the Catholics, they really use that term almost ritualistically, vestments for their clothes. And they have more clothes than anybody else. No kidding. The priest, depending on how high he is, the higher he goes, the more clothes. Or he take off clothes, you think he undressed? He take off one, he ain't undressed. Another one, he still ain't on there. Another one, and another one, and another. He got on about 16, 20 or more pieces. I forget how many pieces, a lot of clothes. He's covered up in a lot of different clothes. Come down now to something related to the subject, and that is the word shine. S-H-I-N-E. Shine. Now, you know, the Bible speaks a lot about the light shining. Let the light shine. And there's a thing a lot of spiritual about. Let my light shine. The light gonna shine. It's shine. Shine, shine. A lot of spiritual about that. So, shine is also talking about wisdom. Shiny metals are precious metals. So, you know, if you say he's bright, it means he's what? Learning. Intelligent, right? So shine means the same thing. Shine. Now, shoe shine. Shoe shine. Why shoe shining is so popular in the West? You got to get a shoe shine. Because the fundamental knowledge to them is where the tension should be. How do we know this? Jesus instructed his disciples to wash their feet and to wash each other's feet. Right? Tension is on feet in Christianity. He was seen balancing himself on the water, with feet upon the water. Right? Feet. The tension is on feet. Mary Magdalene is seen in the New Testament crying at his feet and using her hair and tears to clean Jesus' feet. Right? So the tension is on feet. We know that. The tension is on feet. So in the Western society, shoe shining is very important. But they don't like to have, they enjoy the white man, Caucasian, European man. He enjoys having a black man, African-American, or African, or somebody of that descent. He enjoys having that person shine his shoes. And polish now come in all kind of colors. But polish used to be black. Later they made brown shoes and all kinds. And then, you know, they used to dye the leather black. Black was a thing. But later they made different colors. And now at first the black and brown and white. Now you got all kind of polish, right? All kind of different colors. But it started with black. Black. Why is it so important that the black man shines shoes? So some of you say, oh, that means nothing. Brother, everything in the language of society means something of great importance. It just depends on what context you're speaking or looking at. Speaking in or looking at. Now, so the black man, he's an important man for shining shoes. And I have heard the expression, maybe some of you heard it. Say the white man said this. I don't call you boy, because son, pardon me, because you shine. I call you son because you mine. Some of you might have heard the expression. I don't call you boy, I don't call you son because you shine. I call you son because you mine. So he was distinguishing between S-O-N, son, boy, a child, and S-O-S-U-N, son, the enlightened person. The person that has inherited the knowledge from the Heavenly Father. Okay? It's you in. So he distinguishes between the two and that joke or that mockery of the Belalian man, the African man, by saying, I don't call you a son because you're mine. I call you a son, pardon me. I call you son because you're mine, not because you're shine. And then put him in a position as a shoe shine boy. Don't you know they had us shining shoes so much and depicted us so much as a shoe shine boy until really when the world think now of a shoe shine person, right away our image comes to their mind. No, that's a fact. When they think of anybody shining shoes, right away one of us comes to their mind. Because we have been cast in that position for so long, so much. So what's important? Shoe shine, boy. What's important? Shoe shine means, shine means to make bright. Making bright means either making it bright in knowledge or bright in emotion. Because a person is bright in emotion, they are bright too. The word white, light, bright all go back to the word happy. In a very ancient language, people associated white with happiness, light with happiness, brightness with happiness. Later on, it became to be associated with enlightenment, learning. Because people were sensitive and happy before they were intelligent. When they got the sciences, then they stopped giving the meaning of white or light or brightness as emotional upliftment. They started giving it as learning, light, enlightenment, pardon me, enlightenment. So that's the progression of that word, that the white or light comes like that. So to shine can either mean bringing light of knowledge to the foundation, to the fundamental life, or it can mean bringing emotionalism, lifting the spirit of the fundamental life. Now, how does he shine the shoes? That should tell us something about, that should let us know what they mean. He shined the shoes with a rag. A shoe shine rag. Right? So he's ragging the shoe. That's what they say. Rag the shoe. Right? If you will shine the shoe, you know. Rag the shoe. He's ragging the shoe. So he's shining the shoe with a rag. Rag means a piece of something. Or either a used up thing that does not have its original quality. So he's shining the shoe with a rag, but he makes them look mighty good. So who is he representing in that depiction? He's representing the dumb preacher. He represents the dumb preacher who takes a piece of the book that's really a rag of the book. He takes a piece of the book that's really nothing but a rag in his hand, and he shines the soul. He shined the souls of the people. He shined the shoes, but the shoes represent the soul. He shines the souls of the people with his rag, or with his ragged irreligion. Excuse me for doing this, they did it. I'm just telling you what they say. So he shined the shoes. Now tell me, who made Christianity lively in this country? Wasn't it the shoe shine boy? Wasn't it our fault? Our preacher made this religion lively. The spiritual, the old black spiritual. All that is what really popularized Christianity and turned it into a shining religion in the West. Those early Gentiles were either so bookish minded, so academic minded, so logical-minded that they couldn't do nothing but just lock themselves up in discussions of theology, fine discussions of the logic of the theology of Christianity, or they were nuts out here in the society, wild and crazy, fine brimstone preachers, right? Calvin and the Calvinists. You know about them in history. Yeah. Selling spookism and superstition. A bunch of dumb people. That's what they were. And the religion was nothing but a mockery in this country. Except for the exclusive quarter of the learned people in Christianity. They represented a small minority. And they were not seen present out in the society. Only in institutions of learning, right? Yeah. But it was the masses of the European or Caucasian people that gave Christianity a real primitive pagan look. They preach horrible things, frighten the people into becoming converts, act crazy, act like wild, crazy people. Some of you maybe not haven't been to that church. I have. I've been to some of their churches. When I was a young man, I went to see what they were doing. And they're crazy. They were crazy people. Yeah, they were just drumming fear up in you and everything. There was a few talking good, you know. like the Quakers, brotherly love and decency and human decency and a few others. But for the whole, the Western world was that Calvinist mentality. Right or wrong, you all correct me if I'm wrong. The Christian masses of the Western world was of that Calvinist mentality. But the Negro, with his freedom movement, his movement to get recognition to his human and social aspirations, he gave a human touch and a human sensitivity to the church. That's right. It was through the black man of America, the African American, that Christianity in America and in the West began to shine. Began to shine. Meaning it began to appeal to the likings of the people. That's what it means. It began to be attractive. It began to be attractive. The black man made it attractive. By doing what? By shining the soul with a rag. Yes. By shining the soul with a rag. The foot, the shoe is symbolic of the soul. So actually the shoe covered the whole foot, but it's symbolic of the soul. Shoe in Egyptian mythology, in Egyptian language, meant the spiritual ascendancy. And that's of the nature of the soul. It's the soul. The soul in its ascendancy. You see? So shoe means that, but it covers the whole foot. Now, they call the soul the tendons, the very sensitive part of the foot down there, right? That's your soul. Now, you look. The soul has an arch, right? It has an arch. And that arch is uplifted. It keeps that part of the foot off the ground, right? So actually, that part resembles the drawing of Shu in Egyptian mythology. In Egyptian mythology, Shu is drawn as a man standing on the ground with his body bending like that, going all the way up into the sky, and his hands on the ground. Nothing touching but his hands and his toes like this on the ground. His fingers like this. I'll do it for you. This is how Shu is. His head is down like this. Body arch. And he represents the sky arch. And by interpretation, he represents spiritualism. Spiritualism. And they connect that symbol with your foot, and that's why Shu must stay Shu. They may call it news, they may call it wedges, they may call it a lot of things to describe what is happening in the seasonal manipulation of your mind, but they always keep that one word, shoe. Okay, I think we about covered that pretty good. All right. Few comments and we finish it. Now, polish. Polish. The polish and the shoe is what shines it, right? Another word for polish is what? Wax. Wax, right? Wax, what does wax mean? To seal. Bring together. It's to bring together. But wax is used as a sealer, right? And it seals up worn places or holes. It just covers it over, right? So it hides the damage, and it protects the damage from exposure, right? But it doesn't heal. That shoe ain't healed. That's the same old raggedy worn out shoe, man. It's just covered. The polish has covered it over and been shined up to make it look like it's bright and new. But it's the same old worn out shoe. Now, yes, it's called polish. What is polish? Means something to make shine, to make bright, to make shine. And it's a paste, right, or wax. And what is it made out of? Fine powder, right? It's so fine that it has no grit. Smooth as it can get. It's been fined out so much that it's real smooth, like grease. But it's not grease. It's actually polish. It's different. So wax-like, polish. Okay. Look at the word fine now. Fine. Look at the word fine in the word refine. And look, why they have a word like this with fine in it? Confine. Fine, refine, confine. Why would you want to lock up something fine? So they say confine means to lock up, right? I can understand that fine means bright, good. I can see why you would refine something, means bring it back to its fineness, right? But I can't see why you would confine something. It doesn't make too much sense. But if we are talking about knowledge, knowledge is fine in the Bible, also means brilliant, wise, bright, intelligent, if it applies not to physical things so much, but to the essence, to the wisdom, principles, etc., then I can understand it, because I know that's what they have done. They have confined, they have locked up knowledge, right? So they say they put you in a prison. They confine you. So here, I threw something we left out. Let me close it up here. Here, they confine you by putting you into a prison. P-R-I-S-O-N. But they also have something they call a P-R-I-S-M, prism. And some of the people in this society, they don't call prison prison. They call it prison. He's in prison. He's in prison. They don't say prison. Just listen. And you hear somebody say prison. Oh, they're in prison here. Prison. They imprison him. Instead of saying imprisoned him. They imprisoned him. Or he was in prison. Oh, he's in prison. Instead of saying imprison, they cut it short and it sounds like in prison. Like a prison. P-R-I-S-M, you see. Prison. Okay, prison means what? Prison is a solid with a certain design, and it's transparent. It's what they call homogeneous, consistent throughout. Whatever, it can't be made of different kinds of material, impure. It's whatever it is in one part of it, it's that throughout. And its shape is consistent. Its pattern is very consistent, uniform and consistent. It has three sides, built like an angle, in the shape of an angle. And it permits a spectrum, a light to come into it, pardon me, and it shows the spectrum of that light, right? It shows the light in its different colors. So in other words, it manifests the hidden components of light, right? It reveals the hidden components of light. Then they have a word called prison, which is made to confine, right? So what is the prison symbolic of then? Why they got to have prison? Don't you know prisons are too costly for civilization now? There's another way to handle that. They'll do them, bring them out there and beat the shit out of them and kill some of them and it'll be all right, be done. They can control crime much better by not building any house for any criminal. Just bring him out there, bring him before the public TV and beat his butt real good, send him on back home. That's all. Cost the taxpayers nothing but a few moments on the TV. Few moments to watch public television. That's all. Yeah. Beat him real good, send him on back home. Or kill him. and bury him on national TV. Same day. Yeah, that's all it takes. And it could be much better. But prison is a necessity in the scheme of this world. It's part of their language scheme. They have to keep it. Part of the game. Part of the criminal economics. They need it. They have to have it. Now, dear beloved people, we have shared with you things that will make heaven and earth rock and shake and go into convulsion. Well, if it wasn't time, I wouldn't be able to say it. That's right. It's time. Then they got another prison inside the prison. Solitary confinement. Yeah, solitary confinement. So they tell you that they got two programs for the free people. One is to restrict their freedom. And the other one is to deny them any opportunity to express themselves to anybody. Except them own, except themselves. And you tell me if that ain't the program of this society? If they don't like what you're saying, they limit your exposure to only your own self. That's solitary confinement. But everybody out there is in jail. They just confined. But the Muslims, we are in solitary confinement. They don't want us on the media. They don't want us reaching the masses of people. Because they don't want what we got to say reaching other minds. You see? So that's solitary confinement for us. We are in a prison within the prison. But we don't mind. I think they did the same thing to Joseph, didn't they? And finally got in so much trouble they had to go and get him out. Say, hey man, we heard you might be able to help us. And you never can tell, that may happen again. Yeah, they might get in so much trouble, they might say, look, it hurts me to my heart. It tears my liver out. But can you tell that Muhammad, what is Wallace, what's his name? A war with Dean? Yeah, war with Dean. We like to talk to him. War with Dean! That's him! Yeah, that's what I war with. I war with the Dean. As-salamu alaykum.
like the ones before you. And let the power of this gift destroy you. The world needs you to show the way. Show.